This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
All right, week four college football, it's about as good as it gets. Ben Hartsock as well, as good as it gets. He's omnipresent. How about that? Over at SiriusXM, Big Ten Radio, College Sports Radio. You can find Ben at Ben Hartsock on Twitter, of course. Ohio State, national champ, 10 seasons in the NFL. And we say hi to our buddy Ben. Hi, Ben. Let's start. You know what? Random. I'll just pick a game. Let's go Ohio State, Notre Dame. Why don't we start there? Ohio State's laying three and a half. Not necessarily all about the number, but does laying three and a half feel about right for your Buckeyes?
Yeah, I think this is going to be a really competitive game. And I think the more interesting aspect is there's lots of facets of the game that could be critical to its outcome. Like if you look at the quarterback battle, obviously Sam Hartman is the best quarterback in the game, but can the defense neutralize him? Can Kyle McCord, the lesser quarterback, step up in a gigantic moment, right? That both of these teams have talented running games. Audric Estime has more statistics this year. He's running behind a more proven offensive line, but he's facing a great Ohio State defensive line. And so there's just lots of different facets to this game. I don't know which one will be most critical, but I know that one area will be the deciding factor. And I think that the easiest one to pick would probably be the play of the quarterback, and that's advantage Notre Dame.
I would agree with you there. I love Hartman at the quarterback position. Ben, you brought up this Ohio State defense. To me, they've got a chance to be really elite throughout the course of the season. Can they get to Hartman enough, or are they going to be in a situation where they're going to have to bring Eichenberg and Chambers in some blitz situations? Because they have not accumulated a ton of sacks so far.
Yeah, the stats don't look that impressive from a sack perspective. But if you look at just pressures and disruption, that's a little more of a nebulous stat. Ohio State's D-line has been effective there, but that's one that I point to as a turning point. Ohio State can't afford to just force Sam Hartman to step up in the pocket because he's too good. He's not gonna be forced into bad decisions. If you try to blitz him, he's got enough experience that's advantage Hartman. So those pressures and those disruptions that the Ohio State D-line has gotten with JT Tuimoloau and Jack Sawyer and Mike Hall Jr., they need to be sacked. They need to be get to the quarterback and get him on the ground before the ball comes out, because I think those disruption numbers that have been pointed to and the lack of sacks are against lesser opponents, and Sam Hartman will dice you up unless you get him on the ground.
Do you trust Ben McCord? So he woke up against Western Kentucky. It's not a great defense, but do you trust him tomorrow?
Well, that's it's so funny. We spent all day on both shows I did on College Sports Radio and Big Ten this morning talking about that. That a lot of, I think, McCord's struggles it's narratives. It's playing that first game that looked clunky against an Indiana team that I think deep down Indiana's got a better defense than any of us wanted to admit in that moment. But because McCord had that first stubbing of the toe in everybody's first opinion of him, now he's having to answer for, right, well, he's not as good as we thought. But if he would have simply had that in his last game, like look at J.J. McCarthy last week. J.J. McCarthy last week against Bowling Green had three picks. Nobody's worried about J.J. McCarthy. So Kyle McCord is kind of struggling with that narrative when the reality is, if you look at his completion percentage and you look at, he's not throwing a bunch of picks, he's doing just fine. But the reality is, listen, this is South Bend. This is Touchdown Jesus. This is one of the true icon moments in meccas in college football that McCord's going to. And you just don't know how players are going to respond in that environment until you get them there.
Ben, what is the week like, whether it's for Ohio State, Florida State going to Clemson, Ole Miss going to Tuscaloosa, in terms of the preparation? You know, everyone's got their rival at the end of the season, but third week of the season, you guys played Washington State when they were ranked in the top 10 in your national championship season. So what is it like in your preparation? Is it just a heightened sense of awareness for everyone?
Yeah, I had a Columbus beat writer ask me that very question, Amal, about, big games versus small games. And I said it this way, it's not that small games feel small, like a Western Kentucky or a YSU. That game never feels small. It's a college football game, so it matters. It's just the big games feel bigger. And I pointed to the year we went to the national championship, that 7 a.m. on Saturday morning of Ohio State and Michigan, the tailgate scene was mobbed with tens of thousands of people. So you just feel that moment. So I expect those Buckeye fans or those Buckeye players that are traveling to South Bend, they're going to feel that juice of an electric environment there on campus, you know, leading up to that. And the week leading up to that, everybody was social and the coverage of the game knows that this is the game of the week and game day being there and all the trimmings that go where. So it's not that last week was a sigh of breath for Western Kentucky. It's just this game, you certainly feel the magnitude of it.
Okay. Ben Hartsock, Big Ten Radio. I want to go Happy Valley. 24-7 matchup. Iowa 3-0. Penn State 3-0. Penn State, that defense played great against Illinois, but that's a good Illinois defense, pulled away in the second half. It's 14-14.5 with Penn State laying it. Ben, where are you on this matchup?
Yeah, I think Penn State covers that number. And it's not to discredit what Iowa is, because Iowa's a fantastic defense. It's just I'm struggling every week. I feel like I'm more impressed with Penn State as a team. My biggest question marks for Penn State as a team were Drew Aller. And he's playing spectacularly. I mean, he's still almost a 70% completion guy, no interceptions yet on the season. And the wide receiver position, you know, Parker Washington and Mitchell Tinsley are gone. Brenton Strange are gone now. So Keandre Lambert-Smith had been a role player. How does he handle being the number one wide receiver? Well, he's done spectacularly. And Trey Wallace is a guy that's been in the system, but now stepping into a bigger role. So the wide receivers and the pass catchers for Drew Aller have answered those questions. And we knew about their run game, that two of the best running backs in college football in Singleton and Catron Allen, but running behind one of the best offensive lines in college football. So I can't find a hole, and that's just the offensive side of the ball. They're better on defense with Manny Diaz at the D coordinator position. Like I'm telling and reminding Penn State fans, enjoyed Manny Diaz while you got him, because he's probably going to take a head coaching job next year. That defense has got NFL players at the defensive line position, the linebacker position, and certainly at the secondary.
Ben, I want to go to a game that's going to take place this afternoon in the Big Ten between Wisconsin and Purdue. Going to go in a few hours at Ross-Ade Stadium. Kind of give you your perspective on this game. Wisconsin, a 6.5-point favorite. By the way, before you do, and thank you for winning that national championship in 02, but I've done about half a dozen shows with you now. I've never gotten an apology for you taking years off my life in that game in West Lafayette with Holy Buckeye.
Well, you know, it's funny. That's a game. It wasn't quite a night game there at Ross-Ade Stadium, but Ross-Ade Stadium at night is a dangerous place. And Buckeye fans know that because of 2018 with Rondell Moore, the Tyler Trent game. And then I've lost games. Drew Brees being carried off with a rose in his mouth in years past. So Ross-Ade is not a look away stadium. It is a dangerous place to go play a football game, especially at night. But Purdue perplexes me. Purdue is a team that held Virginia Tech to 11 yards and then let Syracuse go for almost 300 yards on the ground. So what is Purdue defensively? And then Wisconsin's got a loss to Washington State, and they've had some turnover issues as well. But that's a game that really puzzles me. I lean with Wisconsin covering that number at 5.5, even though but that's not one that I feel super, super confident in. I just think that it comes down to Purdue is on the whole, doesn't have the horses that Wisconsin's got.
I want to jump to the ACC, Ben, just because it's a huge matchup. We were talking about it before you came on. Dabo's a dog at home. Here comes Florida State. What's your opinion on this matchup?
Yeah, Clemson and Alabama are both dealing with the fallout of whether or not they are fallen dynasties. And Clemson's further down that road than Bama is. Clemson's 2 years removed from a college football playoff. And on top of that, they they didn't trip out of the gate losing to Duke. They just got beat by Duke, and that's hard to reconcile. But the reality is Clemson, I don't have this stat right here in front of me, but Clemson doesn't lose it in Death Valley. History shows that. So I think Clemson, and the reason why this game is so close from a line perspective is because Clemson plays better in Death Valley. So I feel like Clemson still has players on that roster that are going to play on Sundays. They're wide receivers that have been disappointing are still tremendous athletes. And it's kind of like the head scratching nature of what happened with DJ Uiagalelei. The guy can throw the ball, but he didn't do it well at Clemson. Same thing with those wide receivers. Those guys are good. They're just not living up to the hype that we had from them. But a loss to Florida State here is another nail in that coffin to the obituary that would be the demise of Clemson. Florida State's a team that, you know, barely got by Boston College last week. That should be a wake-up moment for them. But if it comes back to coming down to it, I think I feel a little more confident in the history of Clemson at home as opposed to Florida State getting scared last week and waking up and taking care of business this week.
It's going to be a great weekend, Ben. Hey, by the way, props to you for battling through those half a dozen shows with Amal Shaw. That is impressive as well. Big Ten Radio, SiriusXM, College Sports Radio. Ben Hartsock on Twitter. Appreciate you, Ben. Enjoy the football.
Yep. Enjoy your weekend, fellas.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, boys. Amal, Dustin, we all have similar games. When we return, let's start with what we just touched on, that being Iowa, Penn State, 14.5. It's a big number. And then we'll jump to Ole Miss, Alabama. Plenty to go. A lot of college football. It's a big weekend. Sharp money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
This is for you, big guy. Juice Reel. If you're looking to become a better bettor, of course you are. Tens of thousands of people have already turned to Juice Reel. That's Juice, R-E-E-L, in the App Store. Juice Reel is not a sports book. It's a tool to help you beat the books. Juice Reel connects all of your sports betting accounts into one app, loads all of your betting history, gives you analytical edge backed by nearly 1 billion in bets from sports bettors in 50 states. Use the data to follow the winners and fade the losers. Don't place another bet until you've downloaded this revolutionary sports betting tool. It's called Juice Reel. Juice Reel, R-E-E-L. Go to juicereel.com for more information. Become a smarter bettor. Look, boys, the bottom line, Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, the boys are fired up today, of course. A huge college football weekend, including tonight. We were just talking about that Virginia-NC State matchup, which we can touch on in just a second, boys. But wanted to talk about Iowa and Penn State. In particular, this is a tough spot for Iowa. They're missing their tight end and leading wide receiver. They're missing their running backs in Patterson and Johnson. Again, it's an Iowa team that generally struggles to throw the football anyway. And Penn State's fresh off a win over Illinois, where they notched 4 picks. So that is going to mean a lot of LeSean Williams for the Hawkeyes running the football. However, if Penn State, in a whiteout, if Penn State jumps out to an early lead, I think we all would agree Iowa's offense not necessarily built to come from behind. So that would be the key there. Dustin, we'll get to you second because I would imagine you've got something with the first half based on what I just said about Penn State getting off to a quick first start. This, to me, because of the injuries, is a mismatch. And you see it in the number. 2 ranked teams, yet we've seen 14.5s pop up on the board in Happy Valley here. Amal Shaw.
Yeah, you brought up a great point. Jacob Bostic is questionable in this one with a foot injury. Reese Osgood as well at the wide receiver position, also questionable. But more importantly, Luke Lachey, 10 catches on the year, 131 receiving. Out for the season for Iowa, that's a huge blow. This is a team that we know, you look in the NFL with the guys they have, George Kittle, Noah Fant, among others, that have been tremendous in the National Football League at the tight end position. But I got to tell you, Patrick, if you're Iowa, the one area of concern you have is your defense has not been as stellar as they've been in years past. They're giving up 4.3 yards per play right now, which is not an alarming number in college football. But from the Hawkeyes, you'd expect this run game. They're giving up about 3.5 yards per pop on the ground. Singleton and Catron Allen have to be more effective than they have? You know, I mentioned that Shipley and Maffa are probably the second best combo in college football. I love Singleton and Allen coming into the season, but they haven't quite delivered at the level that I would have expected and anticipated. The defense has been elite for Penn State. Make no mistake about it. They get after the quarterback. They can put a ton of pressure on you. They're going to do that to McNamara. Can they force turnovers like they did in Champaign? If they do that, I agree with you. I think Penn State runs away. You guys talked about during the commercial, it's a whiteout game. For me, when I look at this matchup, though, the number's already come down to 38.5. Not going to play that under. But I'm going to go with the Hawkeyes here in 14, guys. I think Iowa can get to 10 to 14 points. That's my magic number in this one. I think Iowa's defense is good enough against the Nittany Lions to keep them in check. Remember, a great game 2 years ago in Iowa City. The Hawkeyes win that one 23-20. But I think this is one where I'll go with Iowa catching 14. And for me, the difference is going to be Cade McNamara. I'm not going to say he's going to throw for a ton of yards, Patrick, but I think his ability to scramble, keep plays live in third and less than 4 yards, he will pick up 2 first downs, in my estimation, in this game with his legs. Dustin, that'll keep the Hawkeyes in this game.
And I like it because I like even more, take Iowa 14.5. I do see a couple of hooks on the board. So if you like them all, Shaw, Iowa in this matchup, Dustin, you can find a 14.5. If you like Penn State, you can lay 14. I'm going to give a shout to the Bear quickly, Dustin, before you jump in. Since beating Ohio State 55-24, of course, Amal remembers it as a 20.5-point dog in 17, Iowa has been a double-digit dog 4 times. In those 4 games, Iowa has been outscored 161 to 41. 161 to 41. If Penn State jumps out early, it's not a team that comes from behind here with the Hawkeyes.
That's why I will be looking to the first half. For this one, I already placed the bet. It's moved a little bit. I got 7.5 in the first half, which is a number I really liked. Obviously getting more than a touchdown in a big Big Ten showdown. Here's the thing. You go back to past meetings. And going back to 2016, that's 6 meetings between these two teams. The only time that Iowa would not have covered at the half 7.5 points was 2016. The 2016 Penn State roster was Trace McSorley, Saquon Barkley, Miles Sanders, Chris Godwin, Mike Gesicki, Marcus Allen. That was a loaded Nittany Lions squad. And while I do think this offense is very good, Drew Aller is still young. And I think that Iowa can hang for this first half. If you can find a book that has 7.5 out there, I still like 6.5. I think they will hang around here in the first half, keep it a low-scoring game. And the reason why I wouldn't go full game is, as you mentioned, while Cade McNamara is an upgrade to what they've normally had at quarterback for Iowa, he still will not be able to make the throws if they're down to get back in the game and Penn State could run away from it. That's why, to me, they are prime positioned for a first-half bet plus the spread.
We've got a 15-13 matchup. Great job, boys. Ole Miss, Alabama, 6.5. DraftKings is showing Bama, lane 7. Amal Shah, can I beg of you to get Jalen Milroe in space? Can he just run the football? You've got running backs. You just gave up 5 sacks against South Florida. You don't have the guys outside that you've had in the past for Alabama. That's pretty evident. You don't need to do anything except get boring if you're Alabama and run the freaking football. And I hated the game plan when Milroe, you have to, again, should have started against South Florida. Didn't. We understand the drama. But Milroe, you've got to execute and get him in space. Don't have him drop back like a traditional drop back quarterback. That's what they did against Texas, and it burned them. Let's go. Alabama, 6.5, 7 here.
Yeah, I think this is, to me, if you're playing Ole Miss, you got to play the money line here, Patrick. In my estimation, if Ole Miss is going to cover the number, they're going to win this game outright. I know you're getting almost a touchdown. Now it's down to 6 in certain spots. But I think Jackson Dart has now become a legitimate dual threat, and that's going to be the key. To me, if him and Judkins can run the ball effectively, it's going to put some pressure on this Crimson Tide defense. And I got to tell you guys, one concern I have for Alabama is their front 7 is not elite. We're used to the Crimson Tide having guys that can get after the quarterback. Yes, we know how good Dallas Turner is or how well he can potentially play. But to me, it's the back end, McKistry and Moore, that are great in this secondary. But other than that, I'm not buying this Crimson Tide defense. We saw Texas take advantage of some opportunities and really some missed opportunities as well. And the pace with which Lane Kiffin will want to go make a huge difference. Now, the one question mark for me on the other side is, can Alabama complete passes to Burton and Bond when the opportunity presents itself with Jalen Milroe. I love the decision to go back to Milroe in this particular spot. I think he's going to be effective on the ground on third down. And unless they use the same blueprint that Texas did, which I think we'll expect to see something comparable, they'll have an opportunity here to negate what Milroe does. He's going to have to beat him with the pass. If he does that, then Alabama's going to win the game. But, Patrick, this is Ole Miss's best chance with the lane train to go into Tuscaloosa. Remember the game a couple years ago with Matt Corral? They went in there. They absolutely got their heads ripped off in that game. This is not the same Crimson Tide defense. I like Ole Miss here plus 210 on the money line. I think they've got a great shot to win the game. However, if Ole Miss doesn't win, Patrick, Alabama's covering the spread and they're winning this game comfortably. I just feel like it's going to be blowout city by Bama or Ole Miss wins this football game. I know that's not really giving a great answer to the audience, but to me it just feels like which team's going to answer the bell, I don't know for sure, but I roll with the Rebels in this one.
No, I get the logic and I love it. Dustin, 2.5 minutes, it's yours. Go ahead.
This is one of the weird ones. This one makes me feel weird to evaluate and to say because everything I've researched tells me history's not on my side here. So, Ole Miss, they have a mobile quarterback. And in the past, Nick Saban has struggled to contain the mobile quarterback. It's frustrated him for years. And Jackson Dart is coming off a game where he ran for 136 yards, scored 3 total touchdowns. So that's why I'm going to look at Ole Miss here, and I'm going to look at the first half. I do have concerns about the fact that in the locker room, Saban could make adjustments against Lane Kiffin, who's 0-4 lifetime against him, while at 0-3 at Ole Miss, 0-1 when he was at Tennessee against Nick Saban. I could see Saban figuring some things out in the second half, but I think this offense for Ole Miss could catch Alabama's weaker defense as Amal broke down and get out to a lead or at least keep it within a field goal. The fact that I'm going to get that hook, that 3.5 at the half, really enticed me to take the Rebels here in the first half. My biggest thing for Alabama is that I think their offensive line is atrocious. Like, it is offensive to watch. That is not what we normally see from this program, to have an offensive line that bad. And I know Milroe can make up for a lot of it, but he can't do everything. And that's where I think Ole Miss goes into the locker room, keeping this a close game or potentially having the lead. So I'm going to take the 3.5 with the Rebels, and I don't know how the second half shakes out. That's why I can't touch it. But I do think early on, Lane Kiffin can make enough plays offensively with his team to catch Nick Saban going into the half with the lead.
Take us out, Amal. Go ahead.
Just real quick, I think this is going to be the third best game of the weekend to watch. Florida State, Clemson, number two. And I'm going to tell you right now, nobody's talking about it. We're going to get to it in a little bit. Oregon State, Washington State's the best game of the day. It's no question about
it. You legitimately stole my tease. By the way, 55.5, we're going over. Alabama can't rush the passer, and their defensive backfield stinks. Both teams are going to score. Amal nailed it. Oregon State, Washington State next. The best game on the board, boys.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Competition, it's good for everybody, and VSiN shows are clashing. We've got a subscription contest going on. Help us out. Sharp Money needs your help, and then we're going to help you by giving you 10% off the annual subscription. I had somebody email me, I think it was a couple of days ago. They got the annual subscription, couldn't be happier, already made their money back and more. You can too, and when you do, use the code SHARP. Help us out. $1,000 voucher on the line at Circa for a Super Bowl future. It's VSIN.com/subscribe. Now, remember, when you sign up and become an annual subscriber, you're also going to get the betting splits. What's fascinating about Colorado-Oregon is off the opener, we pushed up to 21. Remember, everybody's going to be betting Colorado as far as the public. So something's fishy here, boys. We're up to 3 touchdowns, yet everybody's back in Colorado. Something to think about and why you need the splits. Let's call it what it is. Colorado's been a great story, 3-0, and it's a top 25 matchup. Nobody saw it coming, but this game is going to be won by Oregon in the trenches. Colorado's lived off takeaways. They've got 10 on the year, Amal Shaw. Oregon doesn't give the ball away. They're not going to give the ball away. No Travis Hunter is huge. It's been fun. The ride's been exciting. It ends in Eugene. Oregon's going to win big here. I'm hoping that public money comes in and pushes it down below the three touchdowns so I can jump back on Oregon. But I like Oregon to roll here.
Yeah, first of all, Outson Stadium, in my opinion, arguably the toughest place to play in the Pac-12. I'd put them in Washington as probably the two toughest places. But more importantly, you mentioned it, no Travis Hunter in this matchup for Colorado. Just what he can do offensively, defensively, he is an elite player. Remember, number one recruit out of high school 2 years ago across all of high school football. So big blow there. Bo Nix has been tremendous for this team so far in terms of what he's been able to do. I just don't know if Weaver and Horn on the perimeter can give this team enough from a Colorado standpoint, Patrick. And remember one other thing to keep in mind. Oregon runs a 4-2-5 defensively. Last year, they were second to last in college football in pass defense. They've changed all five starters on that defense. That's been the key. They went into the transfer portal. They brought in some guys. It's made a huge difference in terms of what this team's been able to do so far. And I got to tell you, Patrick, when you look at back there, Williams, Johnson, and Jackson, it's made a huge difference. I think this team will be fine offensively. I love Troy Franklin. If you haven't seen him in the X spot, at number 11, this guy can go get it. Him and Bo Nix seem to have a great combination. And then Bucky Irving seems diminutive, but he can run the football effectively. I got no problem with your play here. I didn't touch this one, but my only argument I'll give for Colorado is if you're within 27, you're going to have an opportunity late because Shadur and company are going to throw the football. You could potentially get a backdoor cover here.
Yeah, there's going to be 75 points scored. So we look at the total, it's sitting 70 and a half. Offensive line's not great for Colorado. Oregon will push them. And I think Colorado's biggest weakness, big guys along the defensive front, and I'm all mentioning it's all transfers, so they don't have depth. That is the difference. Oregon's just a deeper team. They're bigger. They're better up front. That will be the difference here.
Yeah, I might be in the minority here, but I'm going to look to the total here as a way to fade Colorado to continue their success. And the way I'm going to do that is by looking at the under. I think a lot of aspects of this game play into the Ducks' hands. This is the 16th best pass defense so far. They're only 73rd against the run, but that's fine because Dylan Edwards, while he's a really super talented running back for Colorado, they don't run the ball very much. And this Ducks secondary is limiting passing to 158 yards per game for opponents. They're able to hold down these passing attacks they're facing. I think for Colorado, that plays into the under. They will be limited offensively somewhat. And I see you mentioned Bucky Irving. I think Oregon has a potential here with this game, guys, to play ball control in the second half when they have the lead. That means less scoring. I also like the idea of Dan Lanning now having 3 weeks of prep to see what Colorado's putting out there offensively to adjust. Let's remember, he's a defensive-minded head coach, has a pedigree where he came over from Georgia and won a national title. I'm not saying the Oregon defense has lived up to that thus far, but I'm just saying he is focused on shutting down Colorado. I like the under. I'm going to go under 70 and a half. It just feels like a lot of points in a mismatch.
You're giving me 3 points in Pullman with Wazoo, and here comes Oregon State. Hey, Dustin Sweetelson, Amal Shaw, let Cameron Ward cook, right? And if you're going to beat this Oregon State team, who's got a great defense, you can do it through the air. And I think that's exactly what Washington State's going to do. They gave up the Beavers 200-plus passing yards against San Diego State. Amal, I know some of it garbage time, but they are starting a safety at quarterback, the Aztecs, and also San Jose State threw on Oregon State as well. These are two very good football teams. I'll take the 3 with Wazoo at home, Amal.
Yeah, I don't think you can go wrong with that bet. The one thing I would point to that's really been most impressive to me so far is Washington State limited Wisconsin to 90 rush yards. That's going to be the key. However, now you are facing, in my opinion, a top 3, top 5 offensive line in college football. When you look around for the best offensive lines, you start in Athens, and then I would go to Corvallis second. I think this offensive line is as good as anybody. DJ Uiagalelei has been outstanding so far this year. Completion percentage around 62. Bolden and Gould on the perimeter have been great as well. But for me, it starts and ends with Martinez and Fenwick. Martinez is averaging, Patrick, a ridiculous 8.8 yards per carry. And by the way, he doesn't have 10 carries. We're talking about 40 carries for 351. Deshaun Fenwick's been outstanding as well. He's averaging better than 5.8 per carry. I like this Oregon State team a lot. My question is, can they slow down Cam Ward on the defensive side of the ball? You guys talked about the deficiency with this team in terms of the passing game. But again, people are not giving them enough credit. They give up 17 to San Jose State. The Aggies out of UC Davis only 7, and of course San Diego State just 9. To me, 33 points in 3 games. You're playing some defense. I still think Fenwick, and Martinez are the difference in this game. DJU makes a couple of plays with his legs and arm. I like Oregon State going into the Palouse to get the win and cover the three.
You trust DJ to take care of the football? Because that's, again, like we talked about with Clemson and Florida State, turnover is key here.
No, you're absolutely right about that. I do not completely trust him to take care of the football. But what I do trust is Jonathan Smith, their head coach, who's going to be like, hand off left, hand off right. Martinez left, Martinez right. Fenwick in between the tackles will be just fine.
I can't wait for this football game. Let Cameron Ward cook, big guy. You've been cooking. What's up?
I'm going to go on the other side of this one. I thought Amal was with me because we're both big Cam Ward guys. We both think he's criminally underrated across college football as far as quarterbacks go. Look, DJU has looked awesome, but 47% against a bad San Diego State team. That is not the Aztec squad we saw a year ago that had an elite front. Also, the Oregon State defense a week ago let Jalen Maiden throw for 256 yards. That dude used to be a defensive back. Not a good look for them. Their O-line's awesome, but they beat up on San Jose State and UC Davis. Then they didn't cover 24.5 at home versus the Aztecs. I'm going to go to the other side. Amal mentioned Washington State. They held Malusi and Allen to 70 combined yards when they upset Wisconsin at home. They were a dog then. They're a dog again this weekend, catching 3 points. I don't know if they'll win upright. I think they have an absolute shot to do so. I'll take that field goal of what I think will be an extremely close Pac-12 game. The last two standing in the Pac-12, if I'm not mistaken, Oregon State and Washington State. They're the final members to not have plans of where they're going next. My only concern with Washington State is that offensive line. I'm very concerned that Cam Ward gets sacked way too many times. That is the biggest issue. If he can use his legs, they can create good throws for him. I think Washington State can cover this three, potentially win the game outright. I also think the under makes a lot of sense. The last two matchups between these teams, the totals were 55 and 34. It's set at 58 and a hook right now. The under could make a lot of sense for some people.
Patrick, can I just give one quick pushback on the statistics in terms of yardage for Oregon State yielding against San Diego State? They gave up 151 of 326 yards in the final three possessions of that football game in the fourth quarter.
Fair enough. I can't wait for this matchup.
This is the best game. You know, it's funny. Our boss was just asking us. John Goulet was here. He goes, "Why you don't think the Ohio State Notre Dame game is good?" I'm like, "Yeah, it's two marquee names, but I don't think it's a game I'd sit there and say, hey, if you could only watch three games on Saturday, just as a casual fan who didn't bet on a game or is not rooting for one side or another." That would not make the list.
Pure football.
This is the best game. And it's a 7 o'clock Eastern start, 4 o'clock on the West Coast. I think this game is Fox National. This is going to be a great football game. And Patrick said it best. Turnovers, do you trust DJ? It's going to come down to the final possession, whichever team can limit penalties.
Hey, boys, quickly as an aside, that Georgia schedule starts to tighten up. They've got UAB in Athens this week. The number just got hit from 41 down to 40. Why? How about Georgia as 38-plus point favorites or more? 0-10-1 ATS since 2015. I'm just saying that's a big nut to cover. Excuse me, number to cover. I feel like I'm hanging with my boys in Michigan, pardon my language. 41 down to 40. Georgia, UAB steam out of nowhere, boys.
Well, I think Jacob Zeno is not going to get the start. I think it's going to be Trent Dilfer at quarterback in this one. That's why the move. Dilfer, the head coach of UAB.
The only reason why it would move like that is the possibility that maybe Georgia doesn't score 38 points because they're so conservative.
Check out those splits. Oregon up to 21. If you're nervous about lane 21 with Oregon hosting Dion in Colorado since the start of the 2022 season, Oregon as 13-plus point faves, 7-0 ATS. No problems covering a big number.
I just want to add quickly on the Georgia game. Patrick brought up a great point with those odds. But if Georgia's up by 28 or more going in the second half and they've shut out UAB and you get a 21.5, take the second half under. It'll be run, 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 dogs, and looking for the shutout.
We got a great Pro Board and Survivor next. Samich as well.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
All right, we're back, baby. Another week of football. DraftKings Sportsbook is keeping us in on the NFL action, which we're hitting in just a minute here on Sharp Money. New customers can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Throw $5 down on any of this week's epic matchups. And guess what? You walk away an instant winner over at DraftKings. Football's more fun, duh, when you're in on the action. So download the app, DraftKings now, and use the code SHARP. New customers, $5 to win $200. Can't beat it. DraftKings, official betting partner of the NFL. The crown is yours. Amal Shaw, stunting in the navy blue. Goulet's in town as well, so you know he's hitting it big right now. The big guy, Dustin Swedelson, as well. I'm Patrick Maher, Sharp Money. If you're getting paid on September 22nd to talk football, we're stealing money, boys. Speaking of which, we're going to get to the NFL. Trayvon Diggs, more news as far as the quarterbacks. Just quickly, because you both sent so many over to me this morning, I want to round out with a random. Let's go Colorado State, Middle Tennessee State for you, big guy. An absolutely impossible spot for Colorado State. Played late into the night on Saturday. Penalties all over the place. Injuries. They head to Middle Tennessee State. Right now, the number is 4.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Blue Raiders of MTSU. I don't even need to break down the actual X's and O's here. This is just a horrible scheduling spot for Colorado State, especially after the buildup we saw a week ago. You add in Jay Norvell's comments. It's already a huge rivalry. They almost won the game. They lose in overtime. It was late at night. Middle Tennessee was in their beds watching that game finish out. They've had more time to prepare. And now for Colorado State, it's been a week to wallow in the misery of that loss. I know you're supposed to turn the page, but they almost got one and took down Coach Prime and the Buffs a week ago. I think it's a huge letdown spot for Colorado State on the road, traveling to Murfreesboro. Let's lay the 3 points with Middle Tennessee.
Baylor stinks. The number is indicative. You want to follow up on that one quickly, Amal?
I like the play. Good spot. Good situational spot. Back-to-back road games, tough for CSU.
When we talk situation, when you hear the word spot all over the network, we're looking for just what the big guy pointed out. Colorado State, they're up late. It's an emotional letdown. They're kids. They're headed to Middle Tennessee State. It's a perfect spot. Texas, number 3 in the country. They're going to lay a big number at Baylor. Baylor stinks. 16.5. I'll give you 17 over at DraftKings, 48.5, a low total here. With Texas Baylor, I'm Amal Shaw.
And I'm going to go under in this game. This is a rivalry game for people that are unfamiliar. Waco, not that far from Austin, less than 2 hours. And I'll tell you what, Sawyer Robertson might be a nice kid. He's not a nice quarterback. And I think this Baylor team will continue to struggle on the offensive side of the ball here. But their defense is solid, Patrick. I think that'll be the key in this game. I just don't see Baylor really being able to get to 17 points in this one. And I think Texas will probably hover somewhere around 28 to 31. I like the under 48.5 in this game. Don't have an opinion on the side, but I think this is a game where Baylor may really struggle. And if you like the horns on the road, not a problem there. But under 48.5. By the way, great explanation for you from you on spot. I think that's so important for people that may be unfamiliar with it. There are different types of situations that come up throughout the college football season and even in other sports, but really important in college football.
VSiN is the sports betting network. It's also the home of the Dallas Cowboys, America's team. Goulet, Femi, Ross. It goes on and on and on. So yesterday was a tough day. Now, a cornerback isn't going to affect the number, but Trayvon Diggs is a ball hawk. He's out with an ACL. You feel terrible for the kid. I will remind you, and we saw it last year. Remember last year, boys, they lost Tyron Smith late in training camp. Also, Dak suffered the broken thumb, missed 5 games. They go 4-1. The Cowboys end up 12-5. So not necessarily impacted by a quarterback and their best offensive lineman. So the cornerback isn't necessarily something that's going to impact the number. However, Survivor, big this week. The Cowboys, top of many's lists. They're in Arizona laying 12.5. We can get into that game coming up in just a bit, 43 on the total. But just the impact on Diggs, and then we'll get to some more of the NFL news and notes as far as injuries, boys.
Yeah, I think it's a huge blow for Dallas. You know, the one thing we talked about a couple of days ago was the 17 interceptions he's had in his career. This is a converted wide receiver at Alabama to the defensive side of the ball. And you have a ball hawk like that creates additional possessions. It helps Dallas immensely. But still think with that pass rush, that's going to be the key for the Cowboys. It is a blow. There's no question about it, Patrick. But if you're a Cowboy backer or a Cowboy fan, not enough to concern you what your expectations are for this season.
100%. Trayvon Diggs, big guy.
Yeah, I think he's a guy early in his career who wasn't necessarily a great cover guy, but accumulated a lot of interceptions because he was a good risk taker and knew when to take those risks. I think since then he's actually developed into a pretty solid cover guy. That's at least according to the people I follow on Twitter who break down film for me, because I don't know what I'm looking at when I break down film. Everyone seems to say that he has really developed as a guy. They're going to miss him, but I would say cornerback is a position you can add via trade during the season in the NFL, and you can make that work on the fly, whereas some other positions, it's a little bit harder to mix a new guy in. So I do think there's an opportunity for Dallas with some salary cap space to potentially go out and trade someone and add someone who can help fill that void.
Marcus Peters was a ball hawk. Trayvon Diggs is better.
Oh, yeah.
More athletic, more talented. It's a big loss. Again, from a betting perspective, not going to affect the number, but that's a big loss long term for the Cowboys. Speaking of losses, so you take a look at the board, and again, if you're looking at survivor percentages, how about Baltimore hosting Indy? TBD on the quarterback, not anymore. Gardner Minshew is going to be starting for the Colts. This number all the way up to 8 over at DraftKings, with Baltimore coming off that great performance. Offense looked crisp against Cincinnati. And here comes Indianapolis. Again, kind of surprised early on. It's a bit of a trap spot with the Ravens potentially looking ahead to Cleveland the following week. But you take a look. Right now, the Ravens have ruled out Justice Hill at running back, Odell Beckham Jr. at wide receiver, Marlon Humphrey at cornerback, obviously. Their best offensive tackle in Stanley. Their center, Owe, the linebacker. Their starting safety in Marcus Williams. It is rough right now in Baltimore, boys.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. And you mentioned on that offensive front to lose two starters there. I think what, Tyler Linebaum in the center there, that's a big blow. This team right now is just in a situation where it's hard to back them simply because of the injuries. By the way, unfortunately, Ronnie Stanley's been injured much more than he's been on the field lately, so that's been a big problem for them. I still think with Lamar there, they can overcome this one in this particular spot, but don't love it as much as you normally would against this Colts team in an AFC battle.
Okay, so the injury news continues. Yesterday, we reported here on Sharp Money, Bryce Young is out, Andy Dalton's in. If you're a bettor, you probably look to more reasons to back Carolina in that matchup in Seattle. That's just the way it works. Also, Joe Burrow, you got an update there as far as the Cincinnati Bengal quarterback. Again, 0-2, can't fall to 0-3, big guy. What's up with Burrow?
Burrow didn't practice yesterday. When he was asked about his plans earlier in the week and if he'll play week 3 against the Rams, his quote was, "We'll see." That is where we stand on Joe Burrow and his status against L.A. We will see.
Guys, I don't think he's going to play.
I don't think it's... I mean, the reports are odd coming out of Cincy, and this is where Cincy gets burned, boys, because they don't play in the pre, and now you open 0-2, and you've got your franchise. You can't go 0-3. You've got your franchise hobbled with the calf. Could hurt him long-term, but you need him against a Rams team.
I think you got to reevaluate if you're Cincinnati going into the offseason, how you approach the preseason next year. I think you need guys in there as much as possible, and not a ton, but, I mean, at least to get some reps in there. And Patrick's right. You look at teams statistically, starting 0-2, they have an 11% chance of making the postseason. At 0-3, you mentioned it yesterday, Dustin, 6 teams have made the postseason historically. I don't want to say it's a crucial must-win game because we're only in week 3, but it sure feels like the pressure is starting to mount on Zach Taylor and this team.
Yeah, Dustin Sweetelson, the last time I checked, hurricane season runs through late November. And while it's not a hurricane, we do have a cyclone potentially affecting the Atlantic seaboard. So I just want to let you guys know, this is big time. It's going to be some major rain with the tropical cyclone affecting 3 games this weekend, potentially as the ball kicks off. 1, Buffalo at Washington. I love Washington catching the 6.5 in that one, by the way. Also, Indy, Baltimore, we just touched on it, and New England at the Jets. Those 3 games will be weather affected. Anything from the 2 of you on those 3?
So I'm wondering, guys, is 44 too high in a game for the Colts and the Ravens when you factor in it's Gardner Minshew, Ryan Kelly, the center, is out for Indy. We listed all the players from Baltimore's out. They could play a run game, ball control style contest, walk away with a win potentially. I don't know. 44 feels a little bit high in that game. Now you factor in the weather. I don't know. It feels like a
tend to agree with you. I think this could be a real problem.
Totally agree.
If you're looking at the over and win being 44 is a good number to take right now while you can. I've seen a couple places get down to 43.5. So if you like this under, I think it's a good one to play. And remember, if it's a lower scoring game with a kicker like Tucker, Patrick, You're not going to take unnecessary risk if you feel like it's a low-scoring game. You've always got 3 points when you get inside 35 yards.
Sunday, strong winds, heavy rain, high surf. So Amal Shah, you know Amal Shah, for those that don't know, Amal Shah is a big-time surfer. Last time he visited me in L.A., cowabunga, dude. Samich is next. We're going to run the NFL board.